Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of...
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and of course, you know I get the best guests in the world, and I had to go to... one of the smartest guys in the world, a graduate of the London School of Economics with honors, of course, written a couple of books, a friend that I met at Minds and Money, Adrian Day of Adrian Day Asset Management. What's up and welcome aboard, Adrian.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. And of course, obviously, we can tell by your accent you may not be from Annapolis originally, but London School of Economics. So tell us about... economists and your views and thoughts of what's going on around the globe.
Gosh, that's a big subject, isn't it?
Well, I know you like to talk, so I'm opening up the door for you.
Well, economists, of course, always talk about it on the one hand and on the other hand, because, you know, things are never completely clear-cut. You know, I think what we're seeing in the U.S., I mean, the U.S., can we still call this a continuation of a recovery from 08? I guess we can. It really is an extremely, first of all, it's a mixed environment, but it's also a very sort of tepid recovery, if we're still in the recovery. In a normal business cycle, recovery would be ended and we'd be talking about the next recession at now. But GDP was very, very weak in the first quarter. First quarter is often weak, of course, so we're going to see a bit of an improvement for the rest of the year. But, you know, the positive signs of the economy, it seems to me, are all offset by equally important negatives. And what do I mean by that? I mean, for example, we talk about consumer spending, but then you look at the consumer debt numbers, which have gone up an awful lot. So is whatever positive we see on the consumer side really just a result of debt? We're also seeing increased debt defaults. Car loans particularly are looking weak. So, you know, overall, I don't know about you, Todd, but overall, this really isn't a recovery with strong foundations.
This is it's a house of cards as far as I'm concerned, and I want to tie in something here because it's, I think it'll tie in what you're saying, but my personal opinion, and I want to get your views because you are a highly educated young man and an author and runs an asset management firm, but I don't think that we've really ever totally recovered. I don't think the middle class has ever really come out of the recession. I don't think the middle class has actually really benefited from all of the supposed good things that have happened. I think, you know, you can see by the tax receipts, there's less taxes being taken in, which means that people are making less money, yet we're at full employment, and we have basically almost zero growth. So tie that in for me.
100% right. And, you know, what was it, about 18 months ago now that... the Federal Reserve actually announced with a little bit of fanfare that the aggregate net household income had now exceeded the 2007 peak, and a month or two later, the aggregate household income. Did I say income first time? Household net worth, and then household income had exceeded the 2007 peak. That's fine. That's the aggregate. And as you say, if you cut it down into, you know, the top 1%, the top 10%, and then look at the, you know, ordinary middle class, you find that even today, when I say today, I'm talking about end of 16, latest numbers, even today, 60%, the lower 60% by terms of net household wealth, are actually worse off than they were at the peak in 2007. They haven't recovered. And people sometimes say to me, well, that can't be true. That can't be true. And I said, look, think about it. You know, you've got a middle-class family in wherever, Wichita or somewhere, and the husband and wife both work, and one of them lost a job and hasn't found another job since then. And the house was worth, you know, whatever, $300,000, $250,000 or whatever in 2007, and it's now only worth $200,000. It hasn't recovered in those areas. You know, I think when people on the East Coast and the West Coast, you know, Miami, New York, and Los Angeles, we get a false, or they get a false impression of how the economy's doing. I mean, the middle class, as you say, has simply not recovered, and that's not anecdotal, that's facts.
Well, I mean, let's face it, the average man, the average working man is now making 20% less over a lifetime than he made 15 years ago. So that can't be good for the economy, can it?
Absolutely. And even on a shorter term basis, you know, you look at the real income in real terms, even though inflation's so low, you know, when you're cutting away 1.5%, 2% every year, over 10 years, that accumulates to quite a bit of a cut. So when you look at the real net income for the middle class is lower now than it was in 2003. So, you know, we're talking 15 years almost, 14 years of reduction in income and reduction in standard of living in real terms.
And I could not agree more with that, because I think when you look at it, I mean, look, I've been trading, I've been on the floor or a part of the floor since 1980. And I can tell you one thing, I felt like I had a lot more money in 1988 than I feel like I have today, because it's just the creation of and the reflation, everything that disbenefits me, that gives me no advantage, is now taken away from me. And they've really destroyed any future things that we can actually do at this point until they fix it. What do you think?
No, I agree with that completely. And I'll add to one thing you mentioned, and that is taxes. You know, too often we simply look at what the what the top rate of tax is and say, well, okay, the tax rate's up a little bit from Reagan, is down a little bit from there, you know, blah blah blah, not so bad. But a couple of things have happened. You look at all of the add-ons that you have, you know, the 1.3% Medicare or whatever it is, and the Obamacare, surplus. Tax added on. You look at all those add-ons, number one. Number two, you look at state income taxes going up. That's certainly true for New York, Maryland, as well as many other places. And number three, you look at the fact, many people ignore this, you look at the fact that for higher income people, deductions are getting more and more difficult to take. In fact, very, very few people I know actually use itemized deductions anymore, because the alternative minimum tax does away with them. But as you know, you're allowed to deduct XYZ or whatever up to an income of 120. You're allowed to deduct this up to 140. And so most people who have a reasonable top line income, the real tax rate is just going up, has gone up tremendously over the last few years.
And
several years, I should say.
Well, I mean, you're correct, and it has not gotten any better, and it can, of course, it continues to be worse. And of course, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about the Fed and gold. But I mean, I'm an anti-Fed guy. I'll give you a heads up when we get there, because I'm really upset about the way this whole supposed recovery has been, because they've really destroyed, in my opinion, the common free market. But we are with Adrian Day.
Absolutely.
Adrian Day Asset Management. He is from the London School of Economics. I got to have my dictionary with me to make sure I can stay up with this young man. But he is obviously an author and an asset manager, and has a great comprehension of the actual markets themselves, all markets, not just equities, because, of course, there are a lot more investors out there. But in the meantime, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day if you miss it. There's also The Sporting Edge on the weekends. And, of course, lastly, bubbatrading.com. Check it out. Always a great articles there for you, as well as helping you hedge and learn how to hedge your portfolio. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with Adrian Day from Adrian Day Asset Management after the break. Welcome Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Adrian Day of Adrian Day Asset Management. And, of course, he is from the London School of Economics with honors, of course, I must say. And he's been the author of a couple of books. So, Adrian, I'm a big anti-Fed guy, okay? I think that their original purpose, as intended, if you just let it be, would have been fine. Lender of last resort, no big deal. And, in fact, I would have let the banks go out of business and made the depositors whole with the money that they threw away in the garbage can. But that's my opinion. What is your take on the Fed? Do you think they do a good job, bad job? And what's your opinion?
Well, first of all, I agree with you. In fact, I'd even go further than you. I mean, I think the whole idea of setting up the Fed was a bad idea. Even, as you say, the lender of last resort is a legitimate aim or goal. But, of course, we had lenders of last resort even before the Fed came along. But be that as it may, but what's happened over the last hundred and couple years, one would have to say empirically that the Fed has done a bad job. You look at the dollar, for example, and the dollar has, and one of the Fed's mandates is to maintain the value of the dollar, and the dollar has gone down in purchasing power terms about 97.5%. I repeat that, 97.5% since the Federal Reserve came in. We've had worse recessions and equally bad inflations since the Federal Reserve came in. So they certainly haven't smoothed the economic cycle in any way and got rid of recessions. So no, I mean I think they've just done a bad job, frankly. You'd have to give them a D-. And in recent years, the aim of people, starting with Greenspan, who should have and perhaps did know better, but I mean he loves the limelight. Starting with Greenspan, I think, the Fed has attempted to do away with the business cycle. They want to avoid recessions permanently. And, of course, that took on new heights or depths with Ben Bernanke, who thinks that, having a recession must be the worst thing imaginable, so we have to do everything possible to avoid it. Of course, and that's not true. If you build up a bubble, and it's the building of the bubble that's the mistake, right? You have to have a washout recession to get rid of all those distortions and excesses. And if you avoid having that, a recession equal to the bubble that was created, you're just postponing it. You're just continuing to distort the economy.
They do what the Fed does best, is they kick the can down the road. And then, of course, what do they want to do? Why are they so intent on having inflation? That's so the middle class can get their assets raised a little bit so that they can then pay more tax than what they already own. I mean, my property tax keeps going up because they need to finance the $4.5 trillion they just threw in the garbage can instead of putting it to work good. See, that's the problems that I have with the Fed, Adrian, is I don't mind if you want to have a lender of last resort, but the way that they've done everything, and I'll go back one step farther. When they let the banks in 08, when they let Bear Stearns be stolen by Jamie Dimon, and they let Lehman Brothers go broke, I mean, to me, that reeked of a little bit of a manipulation there, too. I mean, why pick Bear Stearns versus Lehman? Why not save them both and let them both go? I don't get that whole picture there. Would you care to comment? I don't care if you don't want to or not. But.
No, I agree with you completely. I think what happened was they tried to, quote, save Bear Stearns, and then they realized it was a bigger problem. It was a bigger problem than just a single institution, and they didn't want to be in. They sort of quickly said, "Well, we don't want to be in the habit of saving every institution." I think the Fed under Bernanke never really came to grips with just how bad the situation was going to be, and of course they made it worse. But I mean, even as early as the beginning of 08, Bernanke was denying that there was any problem in the housing market. And when it was clear that there was a problem in the subprime mortgage, he said it was a contained problem but wouldn't have any impact on the rest of the economy. But I mean, fundamentally, why is it that we think that banks, particularly big banks, should be saved at all costs when we let other institutions, other companies, other firms go bust? There's no particular logic. There's no logic to it. There's nothing in my mind, at any rate, that says a bank shouldn't go bankrupt if it's made bad decisions and is a victim of circumstances, perhaps. Banks should just be allowed to fail. And the problem with 08 was the Fed, I mean, the bubble was created by the Fed in the first place. There were bad actors, of course. But as I keep saying to people, it's a bit like a drug addict. You can blame the drug addicts all you like, but if no one's supplying the drugs, you won't have the drug addict.
That's right.
Supplying the money?
Listen, I agree with
you. You have to go back to the Fed.
I'm with you 100% on Greenspan. Okay, he was the original bubble builder, I'll call him. I think that I don't like, listen, I would say this to you. I don't like fractional banking either, because my personal opinion, again, these are my opinions, not Adrian's. I'm giving full disclosure. My personal opinion is that if you went to any bank and you did an emergency stress test, any bank, I would venture to say that not one has enough assets for what they have lent out right now. They don't even have the 9-to-1. So all they're doing is creating more money, destructing my dollar, or basically offering a secondary on the cash I'm carrying in my pocket. What do you think?
Well, no, absolutely. But you're talking, when you say it's not a single bank, you're talking about the big banks.
Yes.
The community.
Well, the little banks, they get screwed by everybody. They have no chance. Their regulations are so tough, they can't make it because of what these big banks. I'm talking about the big eights or whatever
no,
number it is.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I agree with you completely. And, there's... We could talk about banks all day long and why we have so many problems in the U.S., which we don't have, say, in Canada and some other places. There's all sorts of historic reasons for that. But, one of the problems is, in 08, the Fed's goal, it seemed to me, was to protect the big banks at all costs. And I don't say they did it... they may well have done it out of good motives, thinking that if a big bank went bankrupt, it would destroy the entire system. But and I disagree with that. But it could have been good motives. But the problem is, you have to have destruction of inefficient businesses, including banks, in order to have the washout that's necessary to have a firm foundation to have a strong recovery. If you think of housing, for example, everybody was going on, we can't let housing prices go down, we can't let housing prices go down. But let's face it, in many parts of the country, housing prices didn't drop far enough. And you can tell that's true because you didn't get a lot of new buyers coming in. I mean, new buyers will come in when things have dropped far enough.
Well, that's always the case. I mean, new money will come in when it's time, and that's the problem when you run on the Keynesian economic theory of keep robbing Peter to pay Paul and the ability to create more capital out of thin air.
Sure.
You create a much bigger problem, and of course,
so if you've, yeah, sorry, go on.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you've created a bubble, then the quicker the recession is, the faster, the quicker, and by its nature, the harder recession is, it'll be quicker. And you'll recover much faster. And, I remember talking to Ron Paul about this. If the Fed had got out of the way in 08, by 2010, we would have been on the road to recovery and had a much stronger recovery than, in fact, we wound up with.
Well, hence Finland and Canada, if they did not do anything and they came out of recovery much faster. Now, again, they're much smaller economies, but it doesn't matter. The point is that if you let the system work, is you allow free markets. Free markets have a great way of pricing themselves. They don't need the help or the manipulation from others. We're with Adrian Day from Adrian Day Asset Management, and he's really educating me and giving us some great stuff. We're going to step out here for a break and come back and talk about gold and about what Adrian Day Asset Management is all about. But this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day, as well as The Sporting Edge, which is now being run by Xander. And, of course, you know, bubbatrading.com, you go see our hedging program. You know, we're not going up forever, so you should check out what we do for hedging and how we get you hooked up. In the meantime, we're with Adrian Day, Adrian Day Asset Management, and we're going to be back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz coming right back to you after the break. The Bubba Show. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Adrian Day of Adrian Day Asset Management. And of course, he's written a couple of books. You ought to check them out. How and Where to Invest Overseas Successfully, Investing Without Borders. We need borders. Come on now. And Investing in Resources, How to Profit from the Outsized Potential and Avoid the Risks. In the meantime, Adrian, what is, you know, you've got some very unique strategies at Adrian Day Asset Management, and I'd like you to share some of those with the listeners, please.
Okay. Well, you know, our firm tends to, our clients tend to be, well-off people, but not the super rich. So, you know, our niche, if you like, is for, you know, upper middle or middle class people who've got a bit of a nest egg and want to protect it and make it grow. All of our accounts are separately managed, and by that I mean not just legally, they're separate accounts, you know, not held in our name, not commingled in any way, but I also mean they're managed separately. So a person might say to me, you know, I want to be conservative, I should be conservative, my wife says I should be conservative, but I really like gold. So I really want to have more gold than you'd normally give a conservative guy, but you know, let's keep the rest of it conservative. So we have that kind of relationship with our clients, where our accounts are all very few of our accounts are identical with another account. We manage primarily, I mean, we're value investors. We're long-term value investors. And we'll look around the world. Global is a big part of what we do in everything. We always look around the world to compare values and potential that we see, whether it's, you know, Singapore or Brazil or the United States. And obviously in some countries at some times you apply a discount. Right now we want a pretty big discount for Brazil. Frankly, relative to Singapore, I want a discount in the United States, but that's a different issue, perhaps a broader issue. But anyway, we look around the world, we look long-term. Mm-hmm. My favorite investments are when I can find an undiscovered stock in any sector, in any country. It might be a gold stock, it might be a little Hong Kong bank no one's heard of, and we find a good quality company that's not on everybody's radar, and we buy it and we hold it for a long term. My favorite investments are ones we hold for 10, 20, 20 years. We're not heavy traders. Now, we do trade around our core position, and that might mean trimming positions, adding to it on weakness. It might mean selling calls and buying puts on things we like, selling calls when they're too expensive, selling puts when the stock's dropped or is very volatile. We do that a lot. But the basic strategy is to have a core position, and I know that's not very popular these days to be talking about having core positions that you hold for the long term.
It's actually very smart. I give you kudos. That's very smart. It's better to keep a core because we do know a couple of things for sure. I know you're not playing in the penny stock world. I know you're not gambling on stock. You're looking for value. So if you find value, we know, what do we know for a fact, that in the history of the stock market, now that could change any day, but in history, we've gone up 9% year over year. So if you're finding value, then you're putting your clients in the best position without turning them around and keep trying to guess where the next great one is, and you're allowing the ones you got to work. I'm sorry, go ahead and continue.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I think when I look back, I mean, we've all made mistakes in investing. We all buy things we wish we hadn't. But one of the biggest mistakes I've made, I don't mean a specific mistake, but a type of mistake, is selling really good quality companies too soon. And as you say, the market over time goes up. So when you sell something, it should be for... I mean, your rationale for selling something should be as strong as your rationale for buying something. That's the way I look at it. So, I mean, we bought Nestle the very first year we opened the business, 1991. Now, that's not an undiscovered or a small cap, of course, but just as an example. And we still hold it. We still hold the same position that we had back in 1991. And it's been a wonderful stock that has had some volatility. It went down in 2008, of course, or 2009. But over those 25 years, it's just continued to move up and done well. So we also have a sort of specialty, if you like, in gold. I think with the gold stocks, you have to trade a little more than you would with the broader market, just because gold stocks are so volatile.
Right.
And when they turn, they can turn viciously. You know, gold stocks typically don't drop 2 or 3%. If something goes wrong, they drop 50 or 60% if something goes wrong. So I think we do tend to trade the gold stocks a little bit more. But the same philosophy applies. We're looking for great companies that we want to hold for a long time. And even with gold, we have a core position in companies like Franco-Nevada. You probably know that one.
Yeah.
We have a core position in certain stocks, so we just want to hold for the long term.
I don't blame you.
Exposure to the sector.
I think that gold, listen, I'm a big fan of gold and silver. I mean, I'm not a gold bug. I'm a little different than others. I look at gold as just another commodity that could possibly play as a currency at some point. But really, to me, it's a commodity, but I think it's a great hard asset that you should own. I'm more of a fan of buying the physical, but I understand you using the stocks and the paper. And of course, you've mentioned it, that you have to be a little bit more careful when you're using, the gold stocks, because they do tend to rip up when they're going right, and they rip right back down when they're not. So you need to be a little bit more cautious in there. But those are ones you can always get back in because of the price fluctuates. So when you use gold, you know, I have one problem with gold, Adrian, in the stocks, and not the companies you're buying, because those are solid. But I do have a problem with some of the paper gold that's out there, you know, like GLD and some of the others. I'm not so sure there's enough gold to cover all the paper that they sell. I'm curious what your opinion is of that.
Well, you know, I'm by nature, I'm not a sort of, let's say, conspiracy sort of person. I think if you look at some of the specific ETFs like GLD, I have a very high level of comfort with those, I have to tell you, because, you know, they're run by good institutions. You have, you know, good custodians, reputable companies involved, State Street, the World Gold Council, HSBC in London. And then you have two different audit firms who audit them twice a year, a surprise audit and a regular audit. So I feel fairly comfortable with that, I have to say. On a broader basis, there's no question that the amount of paper gold out there is a multiple of the amount of physical gold. So the potential for a squeeze at some point is very, very real. Now, that's not why we're buying gold, But I think at some point that potential for that squeeze is very real, and we'll see gold go up by a multiple. And I should say I agree with you completely, I do think gold is money, but that's philosophical. From the investment point of view, we look at gold as another asset. You know, we buy gold when we think gold is cheap relative to stocks and bonds. As it is right now, of course, stocks, in my mind, the risk in stocks is going up, has gone up tremendously over the last year. We haven't really talked about stocks yet, but the risk has gone up as the valuations have gone up. And people kind of look at the valuation and think it's not as bad as it was in the dot-com bubble. But we're still selling at valuations that are well above the historic norm in the stock market. I'm sorry, I've moved on to the stock market.
That's all right. You're doing good. Keep going.
I guess from the point of view of an investor, the way I look at it is, you know, let's assume that people started, because that's the way most people were, you started with stocks and bonds, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever, and you're still primarily in stocks and bonds, other than people in real estate. It certainly seems to me that with the risk going up, this is a good time to run some pretty tight stops on, some of your positions, and look to take some money out of the market and put some of that money into gold, just because the valuation differential is so great. And I agree with you completely. Before, a lot of investors, I'm putting words in your mouth, I'm sorry. So let me just say, for a lot of investors, buying physical is the best way to go. Because if you want a hedge, if you want insurance, physical gold is definitely the way to go. And gold stocks have different characteristics than, physical gold. So if you're looking for a hedge on your portfolio, or insurance against a collapse of the dollar, maybe penny gold stocks are not the way to go. Physical gold is the way to go. But beyond that, once you've got that insurance, I think the gold stocks today, believe it or not, are selling at valuations that are the same as they were selling in 2001.
They give you a tremendous, I got to cut you short here. We'll pick this up on the other side of the break. They do have great valuation. Listen, I play them all the time as a speculator. I'll play in those. I they're great. They give you great opportunities. We are with Adrian Day from Adrian Day Asset Management, author of a couple of books. A graduate with honors from London School of Economics. What a guy. This is the Bubba Show, Top of the Orbis. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. We're going to stop by here for a break. We'll be right back with more from Adrian Day from Adrian Day Asset Management right after the break. The Bubba Show, Top of the Orbis, coming right back to you. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Adrian Day of Adrian Day Asset Management, also author of a couple of books, and also a graduate with honors, London School of Economics. Gotta love it. So you were finishing up, Adrian, on gold, and I do agree with you that those gold stocks, they're a great place. Listen, I like to make a lot of plays. I'm a little bit faster paced when I'm trading those, but I agree with you, and they are a wonderful way to play the markets when you do get these valuations, because I think valuations are being undervalued. Because we are just by the multiple, we're higher than normal valuations, but we're not including that when these companies that borrowed all this dough to buy their stock back to do whatever they did, when these rates do start to rise and they are going to go up, those valuations are going to get even higher. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with that. And one thing I should there's a sort of thought out there that anytime interest rates go up, that's bad for gold, and that's not true. What is true is that if you have rising real rates, that can be bad for gold. But of course, typically when the Federal Reserve raises rates, especially in the beginning of a cycle, they are lagging inflation, and that's where we are right now. So, as an investor in many asset classes, higher interest rates do not, the Federal Reserve raising interest rates does not make me nervous about my gold positions. It makes me nervous about some of my big cap companies that, as you say, have borrowed too much money. But it doesn't make me nervous about the gold positions. And gold can do very well in a period of rising interest rates, as in 2004 to 2007, as in 1977, for those of us that remember. 1977 to 1980, both periods of rising interest rates, but periods when inflation was rising faster than interest rates, and the gold stocks, gold and the gold stocks did very, very well indeed. Gold is, we're jumping around, or I'm jumping around a bit here, and I apologize, but physical gold is the way to go for insurance and for a hedge, but very, very few assets, there are some, of course, but very few assets give you the kind of short-term profit potential that gold stocks give you. Stocks that can double in 1 year, as the XAU. The XAU is the, you know, gold stock index, right. And it includes both good and bad companies, I should say. But, you know, if you look back to, when was that, 2005 to 2006, you know, the index doubled in a period of 11 months. You don't get that kind of potential in many sectors out there.
I agree with that. And so, you know, I happen to think, I thought there was one more down leg coming in gold, and I'm beginning to think I'm wrong. I'm beginning to think that the bear market in gold is over. What are your thoughts?
No, I think so completely. You know, we had the low at the end of 2015, and then we kind of started to come back in 2016 at the end of the year, but it just didn't go down far enough. So I think where we are right now is pretty good long-term support. If you look at a sort of five-year graph, you see 2013-14, we were bouncing up and down off this level. We broke it. We came back up. Now we're bouncing along this level again. I think this is pretty good support. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons why one would want to own gold today. One, of course, is that the dollar, it seems to me, has topped. I'm not looking for a collapse in the dollar anytime soon, if only because other currencies aren't particularly powerful. But it certainly looks to me as though the dollar has topped. Dollar top is good for gold, number one. Number two, countries around the world are not going to be raising interest rates dramatically. The U.S. economy is not strong enough and some of the reasons you just mentioned about corporations, but also the government debt. I don't think the Fed can raise interest rates dramatically anytime soon. Europe is not going to be raising interest rates significantly either. I don't think the economy is strong enough, but more importantly there is, of course, all the stuff that's going on with the debt talks in Greece this summer. Greece has run out of money again. Doesn't seem to be in the headlines, but it'll be in the headlines this summer, I'm sure. The Brexit talks and so on, they're not going to be raising interest rates. So anyway, money remains easy around the world. And, you know, without getting into the political issue at all, I think we can all agree that President Trump is perhaps a little more unpredictable than some other presidents. I think having some gold as a sort of a hedge, if you like, makes just a lot of sense right now in the environment.
Okay, so let me ask you this now. You know, my opinion has been that they have destroyed their true free market system that you and I knew or grew up knowing, that the whole system is more of a manipulated free market, not a true free market. And I believe that the only true free market left really is housing, is buying a house, because that's true price discovery. But even that's not necessarily free, because it really, if my interest rates are low, I get more for my house. If interest rates are high, I get less for my house. So we've really had a major destruction in free markets. What are your thoughts?
No, I agree with that completely. I mean, to a large extent, we've moved to basically, if you say fascist, people think you're crazy. But corporate statism, really, where the government supports big companies, big banks, and also in 2008, we supported, you know, big car companies, and the government picks and chooses which ones are going to be the winners and which ones are going to be the losers. So it's corporate statism, really, which is what we have, to a large extent. And yeah, in so many ways we've moved away, even in housing. You mentioned housing, but you think about the distortive effects of Fannie Mae. You look at the distortive effects of federal regulators encouraging banks to make subprime loans. Let's not forget that. Government regulators encouraging the banks to make subprime loans. And then, you know, 3 years later, prohibiting them from making those very same loans that they were encouraging from making them. And so when you're having government regulators, government action constantly in the market, it just distorts the free market completely.
Well, I agree.
And adds to those distortions and adds to problems, yeah.
I couldn't agree more. I often mention on the air here, so I can say it again. First of all, I call the Federal Reserve a legalized Ponzi scheme, okay, because all they do is create new money to satisfy old debt. But also, Bernie Madoff, I'm convinced that somebody in the inside had to know what he was doing, because what he did, nobody could have done that. But the numbers he was spitting out, and I don't care about the returns, but the volumes that he said he was creating in the dark pools was impossible. So how could not one regulator spot that? Just you got about 40 seconds to give me an answer to that question.
I don't know the answer to the question, because certainly people in the private sector who weren't as close as the regulators could see what he was doing. So why the regulators missed it, I have no idea. It's because he was one of the, quote, good guys.
He was one of the good guys, and of course, you're one of the good guys. You're one of the real good guys, though. Adrian Day.
Well, the SEC doesn't think so.
Well, that's a whole other show, because look what happens. You have to have so much regulatory stuff going on for nonsense that it makes no sense. I mean, the amount of money that we just kind of throw in the garbage can has become more or less a joke as well. But Adrian Day, you are awesome. I really appreciate having you on. Thank you so much. This is Adrian Day from Adrian Day Asset Management. Thank you. I appreciate having you on, sir.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That was a lot of fun with Adrian Day, and he was one of the hosts on the panel that I was in New York on Minds and Money, and really has a great deal of knowledge. And, I think that, he kind of thinks the way we think. And, obviously we don't always agree on everything, but I thought that, his information was really solid. And, you should check out his stuff at AdrianDayAssetManagement.com. I think that you'll be enlightened. And this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and of course, LibertyTalk.fm allows you to get the download every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends, and of course, BubbaTrading.com. You got to go check out the hedging program and get ready to go. And of course, we'll call it a day. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time in the same station. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, thank you so much for listening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.